Attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hi everyone, Ian here for this month's Q&A. see a few familiar faces there. And it's, you know, it's good to see that the familiar faces you see on there are on the webinars quite often. And being in touch and staying here and constantly being on the line is what will get you to a better place, get you to a better understanding. And, you know, it's all learning. It's all part of moving towards a greater good. And, you know, I'm amazed how much I continue to learn out of some of the things that just pop up on daily questions. So I've got a few questions that have come in over the last month, and I'm going to answer those first, and then I will answer those that come in. So you can, if you need to ask a question about something I've said here about some of the other questions, then just type in down the bottom there, and I can quite easily answer those as well. So I will start with that. My name's Ian. I'm a plumber and builder by trade, and obviously a full-time property investor now. Anything I say here tonight has to be taken as an opinion of how I see it. Don't go and take what I say here tonight and make financial decisions on those. You still need to get qualified advice from those people that are qualified to give it to you. And, you know, as I said, there's people that are qualified out there. That's why DIMTNA has a team of people to be able to give you advice around that. So let's start. Okay, I've got a potential JV partner who has serviceability and equity, but no time, which is okay. I have time and knowledge. They want cash flow. I have some passive cash flow, but no available equity. What type of deals can we do, and how can they get cash flow and I get equity? Okay, well, there's a couple of ways that you can do this. You could go off and do deals and that create cash flow. And so let me give you an example of that. Let's say that you went out and you bought a block of units. Okay. So you buy a block of four units and you decide that you're going to renovate them, you're going to strata title them, and then you're going to go off and sell down part of it. And then in the end, they're going to keep two. So, just one second. I've got a few things going on here. So let's say you went off and did the deal. You sold a couple of the units down. By selling a couple of the units, you end up with a valuation essentially on the two remaining units. And out of those two remaining units, you do the calculation of how much you've increased the equity of the property. The serviceability partner and equity partner takes 50% and you take 50%. So he needs to. So the serviceability partner would need to pay you out of the deal. Now, if you're doing joint ventures for cash flow, never. I say never do a joint venture for cash flow. I think it's a bad idea. Something changes tomorrow, and then all of a sudden, two different people going in the same direction, the changing direction. And, you know, decisions have to be made really quickly. So I would say that that's not a great idea to cash flow for a joint venture. Although doing the income, the equity increase, paying out for the non-servicing partner and the equity partner and serviceability partner keeping the property. So in that sort of circumstance, what you would probably do is you'd go off and you would the serviceability partner and equity partner would actually buy the property in their trust structure. This is the easiest way to do it, simply to make it simple. And you as the working partner would create your own company and trust that will be creating business. And the business is servicing and renovating and strata titling and subdividing. And you, that trust would have a joint venture agreement, a contract on the side that the banks don't know about, that no one else knows about, and it's all put down step by step in a memorandum of understanding to start with, and then you get the legal people to draw it up. From there, you do the project. At the back end of the project, you revalue the entire project, and the increase in equity gets split both ways. So that's a really simple way to look at it. there's a number of different ways that you can do these styles of deals. So you can do, you know, you can do almost anything as long as at the back end they're going to get cash flow. And nowadays you might think about paying down debt to create cash flow. So you go off, you do a development deal, you sell part of it, you make a profit, you pay down the loan at the loan on the remaining property that you keep, which makes it positive cash flow. Redraw, move on and do the next one. Okay. Hi, could you please explain the basis of the calculation in the boot camp action plan where net available working equity divided by 0.06 plus reverse LVR equals the purchase price? All right, so let me take you back to the boot camp. So in the boot camp, the reverse LVR is the loan to value ratio that you're likely to get, but on the opposite. So let's say you were going to get an 80% loan. If you could get an 80% loan, the reverse LVR is 20%, right? If you could get a 70% loan, the reverse LVR is 30%. And if you get a 90% loan, the reverse LVR is 10%, right? So the reverse LVR, you can put down as a decimal place. So just a little maths lesson for some that, you know, need the extra help. 20% as a decimal point is 0.2, okay? Now, 0.06 comes from the fact that 0.06 comes from the 6% of property costs. So that's the amount of money it takes to get into a property, to pay your stamp duty, to pay your legals, to pay all the other components, mortgage insurance if you have to. 6% is what the investor loans guys and girls will allow for you to go into the property. So when you're dividing it by, so let's say it was an 80% LVR, the reverse would be 20%. So it'd be 0.06 plus 0.2. So in total, it would be 0.26. So if you did if you had $100,000 cash, and then you decided you were going to go off and do a property, so you'd go 100 divided by 0.26, you would be able to afford a property of $384,000. Now, at $384,000, you'd have an 80% loan that would be around $307,000. So you would then need to put a deposit down, and then you'd have some extra costs. Now, that still doesn't take into consideration that you need to do a strategy. And that's why we put together, well, Christine, sorry about that picture there. Christine put together a spreadsheet for you. So if you go to downloads and then you go to webinar number 75, click into that. This is on the website, obviously, the Ultimate website. And in there, there's actually a purchase price calc. This is the webinar. You've got the download. So download the webinar, watch the webinar. You've got the purchase price calculator spreadsheet in there. And there's a couple of different versions and the PowerPoint that went with it. Now, if you watch that, you'll be able to do, Christine made it really simple for you. And it looks a bit, the spreadsheet when you download it will look a bit like this. Just 1 second. I'm playing with things that are in the way. The spreadsheet will look like this. And you start at the top and work your way down. You then put in what you're going to do to the property, you know, strata title or whatever. And it will punch out for you a figure of a property that you can purchase with the amount of cash you've got and still make sure that you're not going to run out of money, because the last thing you want to do is go and buy a property with the cash that you've got, go in there to start a subdivision or strata and find out you've got no money. That would be very hurtful. Okay. Hi, Dimna. What are your thoughts on fixing in interest rates? Generally, what should we consider before fixing interest rates? And do we fix interest rates on any of your loans? Do you fix any of interest rates on any of your loans? If yes, what type of properties and under what circumstances do you fix and how long? All right. I've had personal experience around this and said quite simply, I don't think I'll ever fix another loan. Now, that's me personally, right? Because I got caught the other way where I wanted to get out of a loan and it cost me about $28,000 to get out of the loan. It was a commercial loan as well on top of that. And, you know, the thing with interest rates is that they go up and down. And so you might say, well, they're not going to get much lower, so I want to fix now. The only thing that you need to consider is that for the time that you fix it, if you have to get out of the loan, depending on which way it moves, there may be penalties for you to actually get out of the loan. So if you fixed it, it usually works in reverse. If you fix it at 5% and the variable drops out to 4% and you want to get out of the loan, they're going to charge you 1% basically over the term of the loan that's left to get out of the deal. Now, when it goes the other way, it's not so bad. So you have to think to yourself, well, you know, if I fix my loan now, if interest rates go down and I want to revalue and move on and do something else, what's it going to cost me to get out? Now, I have spoken to a student recently that fixed in last year, not expecting any more drops, and it's going to cost them about $10,000 if they want to get out of that loan simply because it went in the wrong direction. So, you know, it's really going to be up to you. Dimpner herself, I don't think fixes many because she's a property investor and she's continually flipping, revaluing, doing stuff like that. We're the same. So, you know, that's what she says. So specifically, is it a good strategy to fix in a portion of the PPR loan, say 50% of the loan fixed, leave the other 50% variable with the aim of paying out the variable portion, then lend that money to trust? Well, it doesn't matter whether you're fixing the loan or variable or not. You can pay out your loan and pay it down so you can redraw and go off for investment. So your whole purpose of your home loan is to actually get it from bad debt to good debt. So paying out your personal debt and redrawing so that you can go off and invest. So he says, the purpose of fixing a portion is to take advantage of low interest rates and lock in cash flow outgoings for a term and time period, 3 to 5 years, while still being able to pay down the other 50% of the loan, which stays variable, and then turn that into non-deductible. Yeah, so that's what I just said. Fixing in entirely the whole loan on a positively geared property for the purpose of taking advantage of the lowest interest rates and locking in cash flow. Look, if you're low risk and you want to know what it's going to cost you on a weekly basis for the next 3 to 5 years and you're comfortable knowing that, then lock in. You know, that's what you can do if you're that type of person. Now, I'm not saying that's what you should do. I'm just saying that you've got to look at your own personality and what you're trying to achieve. So if you feel that the interest rates are going to go in an upward direction and you want to lock in for 3 to 5 years and you don't think you're going to revalue in the next 3 to 5 years and there's no penalties out of you getting out of that fixed rate, then, you know, you should go for your life. But then again, like I said, I've only ever fixed once and I'll never do it again. Okay. Piggy bank trust setup. You did not mention about stamp duty payment. Do we need to pay it for piggy bank trust, please? Okay, so when it comes to trusts in New South Wales, there is stamp duty to pay when you set up a trust. And it's I don't know what I haven't. Christine's been doing ours now for a while, but I do remember at one stage it was about $500. For the piggy bank trust, if it is registered in New South Wales, yes, you will have to pay stamp duty. Can the appointed trustee and beneficiary be me, myself, please? Yes, the appointed trustee and beneficiary can be you. The trustee setup. Can director, appointer and beneficiary be myself, please? Yes, it can be. If all these roles are under my name, will it be a sham trust? Will it be a sham trust? Absolutely not. The assets are not really the trust, but are in fact still mine. No, the asset is owned by the trust. I was told that if the trust is a sham, then we lose all the advantages that we hope to gain from the trust. Could you clarify? That's why if you want to go and buy off the internet a $346 trust setup, you can do that. It won't be worded correctly, and you're probably going to put yourself at risk. That's why the investor loans people and the Pacific Law set the trusts up and make sure that the trust deeds are clearly written and correctly written so that it protects you and specifically around the Banford case that was tested by the ATO and the Banfords won, and you can read up on the Banfords. Now, it's not a sham. It's quite simply put the way it is. And the people that are advising you about the sham part of it are actually probably not fully knowledgeable on what you're trying to achieve. The trust setup. We need to get tax file number for trust regardless whether it requires GST registration or not. Is that correct? Dimpna says yes, that the actual trust needs a tax file number. The company will need an ACN. And if the trust is trading and doing trading deals, it will need an ABN. But again, you need to talk to the people that are around that Dimpna provides for you to be able to get the correct advice. Hi, Ian. I need to do a sound budget for building duplex. From the lesson I learned from the current project, I have realized that budget is important. Well, budget is number one. If you can't, if you don't have a budget and you can't keep it, you're in trouble in any property deal. Apart from construction cost, I know we'll incur other costs as well, but the problem was I don't know what other costs are. Do you have a complete list of all sort of costs involved in building a dwelling from A to Z, plus the cost indication as well? We have over 500 councils throughout Australia, and being able to give you one easy to follow document for across Australia is almost impossible, because some of them don't have costs. Some of them don't have costs. Some of them have ridiculous costs. So if you were doing a duplex build, for example, in Queensland, and that you were doing a 3 or 4 bedroom home, it's quite likely that there's a cost of about $28,000 that goes towards your contributions, and those contributions are just, you know, at the developer's cost, so that the local council can put in the extra park benches and the garbage bins and the trucks and all of that sort of stuff. You go to Victoria, though, in some parts of Victoria, you don't have to pay, you pay about $600 in some parts of Victoria to do the same development. So as far as the actual costs are concerned, it's very difficult to put an A to Z, because every deal is going to be slightly different. So Dimpna is doing, with the Quantums, the Quantum members, Dimpna on the 5th and 6th of July, I think, or the 4th or 5th of July, is doing a two-day developer's course, 25% Club, she's called it. And that's about development, the things that you can and can't do, what you're doing, what you have to know about. And so, look, experience is going to teach you a lot, but it's much easier to go and find someone who's done it many times before and follow them, because they've made the mistakes already. So, look, in short, when it comes to construction, when it comes to subdivision, when it comes to strata, every deal is going to be slightly different. It's going to be very difficult to tell you what costs are going to be, especially in the area that you're in. So I would ask lots of questions of town planners. I would ask lots of questions, so private town planners, lots of questions of civil contractors, lots of questions of builders, and make sure that you ask if you're the first time doing this. Now, it sounds like it's the second time if you want to go off and do a duplex. You've got a lot more experience after the first one. Next time, ask the builders. Ask 10 builders about costs and have a look at what they've allowed for in the pricing. Ask architects, surveyors, engineers, plumbers, the private town planners. Ask them every cost that they try and find the same deal in the same suburb that has already been done and has already been built, and then go and find the application on the council website if you can, and ring all the people that did that job. You know, go and knock on the door if you can, if the owners are still there, or if you know who did the development, and find out from them, you know, what were the costs, what did it really cost you? Now, they may say, go away, I don't want to tell you anything. But then again, all the people, all the professionals, all the architect and the builder and everyone, they want your business. So the more they tell you, the better it is for them. So that's what I would say about the duplexes. Hello, Ian. And Dimna, a trust has opened a bank account A and had bought an investment property. Okay, so it goes, so a trust has bought an investment property and opens up a bank account. Okay, the bank account B is the 80% loan of the property, and the bank account C is a line of credit. Okay, so 80% loan came from a bank to buy the house inside the trust, and 20% was lent by you. So let's get rid of bank B and C. That's all been done. It's all been paid for. So all the rent goes into the bank account A, which is the trust bank account, yes. And all the expenses are taken out from this account. That's correct. My question is, if there if there's enough money from the bank account A, we as a trustee, can we get some of that money to use for our daily and personal expenses anytime before the end of June distribution or trust income to the beneficiaries? So yes, you will minute a note, or you'll make a note that, you know, say we're at in November and there's extra money there and you want to pay yourself some money as a beneficiary, you can do that. So you can pay yourself out of the Bank A trust account and it would be a distribution to the beneficiary. You would make note of that and you'd continue to do that. So whatever money has been taken out before the end of June should be noted as to who it was distributed to. That's correct. Then over the time, the property has gone up in value. Okay, so let's just finish that last one. So when it comes to the end of June, you have to have your distributions done out of that bank account, because any money that's left in there as a profit for the year will actually be taxed at 46 cents in the dollar. And there's a post that your coaches have put up about that. So you should be now, you've only got 7 days left to the end of the financial year. And if you've got money sitting in your trust bank account that needs to be distributed, I'd start looking about where you're going to distribute it, because it's going to get taxed at the 46 cents if it's in there the next day. Now, those rules changed only recently, last couple of years, where you could keep it on there, keep it in the bank account after the end of financial year and then do the distribution. But that's now changed, I believe. So you've got to check that up. Okay, then over time, the property has gone up in value. I can either draw a line of credit against the property to use as a deposit for the next purchase. Yes, you can. What I would prefer that happens is that if you do revalue the property in the future, it is easier as a paper trail to pay yourself back the 20%. So it goes back into your personal line of credit, and then that would actually extinguish the loan. So you'd close the 20% loan plus costs that you lent originally to the trust. You would close that down, and then that trust would be trading on its own in theory. Then the money that paid you back personally, you would then take to another property. So you in theory, you have it correct, Josephina. Yes, that's the way it works. The only reason I say pay yourself back is because otherwise you're going to have a loan to Trust A for 20%. Then Trust A is going to go revalue, and then they're going to have a loan to Trust D over here. And then Trust D is going to go and revalue, and that Trust D is going to have a loan to Trust E. It just makes it very messy and tracking it back. It makes it a lot easier if you pay yourself back first and then go out and loan it again. Hi, Dimna and Ian. Love the webinar, so thank you. I have two questions. My brother now lives in Perth and he's looking to buy his property in Australia, which will be his PPR. He already owns a house in the UK, which is rented out. My parents decided they wanted to help him and paid a lump sum in the UK investment property mortgage, which is paid off. I think they would have been better to hold off until he's bought his PPR hints. It's now all they have done is reduce his tax deductible interest and increase his tax payments. Well, no, they haven't. Because it's a PPR, you can't claim interest anyway. On your principal place of residence, you can't claim interest on your as a tax deduction, so it wouldn't matter. Anyway, I had this idea of the way he could take the money out and pay it to his PPR. If he refinances his property in the UK to get the money my parents gave him out and gives it back to them, and they say the money was on loan to him, it was always their money. Fair enough, whatever. Sorry, I didn't mean to give a whatever. That's fair enough is what I meant. Then they wait a month or so and give him the money, which he brings to Australia and puts into his PPR mortgage. Would this work? You wouldn't have to do that. All he'd have to do is revalue his property over in the UK, take that money, bring it. It doesn't have to involve your parents. Just bring it over and use it for his PPR. It's tax-paid money over in the UK. There's an agreement between the UK and Australia. You bring it back here and you buy your PPR. That's pretty simple, that one. Okay, we are builders and we have prospective client who is uncomfortably in debt and as such has a backyard large enough for a granny flat. We are trying to think of ways in which we can both profit from a granny flat on their land. Our thoughts are, if we paid for the approval and construction from funds we have available and then we go half-half with him on the rental income, I guess all we need is a legal doc to say there's agreement with a minimum term and a payout amount of roughly the cost of a granny flat if they want to terminate. Okay, so that's fine. You could go in there. If you had the cash, you could put the granny flat on his block of land. I would want you to probably put a protection. So you either need a registerable caveat or a caveat or a building asset register, which would end up on the title. The disadvantage we thought of this is that we can't get a loan to do the construction because we have nothing to offer as security. That's correct. You can't get a loan on someone else's house. If we purchased the back of their block from them on a company title, then we could borrow to do construction to own the granny flat and land. We don't, however, want to do them out of wealth, but I guess that comes down to the agreed price for the land and how they want to do this money now compared to later. Okay, so you brought in company title here. Now, company title is not something often talked about, and I won't talk about it in detail here because it's a very difficult way to own property and be able to sell it. Okay, so again, I'm not going to go into the details of company title. I do know a lot about it. I do know it's very difficult to sell them at times. There's only two banks that will actually lend against company titles. And essentially, if you're going to do a company title on that block of land with that client, it's probably going to end up that you have to have an agreement between the both of you that you're going to buy each other out one way or the other in the future, because it's going to be very difficult to sell depending on where it is. I do know of some company titles that have worked very well, but others that haven't quite hit the mark. So let me give you an example of how I think you could do this. You could go and get and find a cheap transportable somewhere around the state, or you could build a cheap property. I'm actually going into the market at the moment where with transportables. So we are starting a transportable company ourselves, where we will have the ability to sell the buildings to people and also rent the buildings to people. So you could go to your client and say, look, at the moment, you're getting nothing for your backyard. How about we agree that I'm going to pay you $100 a week in rent for the use of your backyard? I'm going to go in here and I'm going to spend my money. And I'm going to spend, let's say, a standard granny flat will cost you somewhere between $90,000 to $110,000. So you're going to say, I'm going to spend $110,000 on your property. And in the future, if you want to buy my granny flat off me, you're going to have to give me $110,000. You might, as builders, you'll probably put a markup and you'd make some money out of that. But in the meantime, they can't actually buy you out. So at $110,000, if you took that money from a line of credit, each week that would cost you, oh, damn you, my calculator, what did I say? Let's say $100,000. So that's $6,000 a year in interest at 6% divided by 52. And that would cost you, 6,000 divided by 52. $115. So now your cost base is $100 for the rental land at the back and $115 for the 6% that you're paying to put that building on there. So that's $215. So let's say you go and rent it for $350 minus your $115. You're going to have roughly between $200 and $230 a week cash flow. So that's $10,000 cash flow that would go into your pocket. Now, currently, your client would be getting $100. That's $5,000 a year that they're getting. You're getting $10,000 a year and everyone's happy. You could do it the other way. You could say, well, we'll pay you, we'll agree that the prop $100 is what you can get per week on the back of yours. I need my $115 and anything after that will split 50-50. You know, I think the fact that you're giving them $100 a week and you're putting your hard-earned time and money into building on the back is actually probably the way that you should go. So I hope that makes sense. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to start answering the questions that have been brought in today. So let me, what I might do is copy and paste them so everyone can see them. I'll do this here. Hi, I have a question about relocating a house. Looking at purchasing two properties side by side in a street. Would like to move the house on the right to the back of the block on the left house to move it on stilts. What do we need to consider? Estimates on costs, regional South, New South Wales. Okay. In recent years, when you start moving houses, you have to look at the costs of bringing it up to current standard. Now, firstly, you've got costs of putting it on the back. So are you strata tiling or subdividing is what you have to actually work out first, Damien. So if you are strata tiling, well, it's just going to be a unit on the back, which means it's only one sewer connection, one stormwater connection, one electricity connection with sub meters in it. one water meter with a sub meters in there. If you're going to do a full subdivision, well, now you're talking about a new sewer. So you need two sewer connections, two water connections, two electricity connections, two stormwater connections. So you'll have all these extra costs depending on which way you're going to do it. Now, when you move the house with the current building code standards and energy efficiency standards, so in New South Wales, you've got BASICS, B-A-S-I-X, you have to upgrade the property so that it actually meets the energy efficiency rating. So you may need new wiring, new plumbing, new hot water heater, insulation. You're going to have to remove every bit of asbestos that actually is on the house. So if it's on the house, you're going to have to remove the asbestos before you relocate it. So there's those costs associated to that. So they're the things that you probably need to consider. Also remember that if you're doing a subdivision, and it's a battle axe subdivision, so you've got a driveway to go to the rear block, that you will need compaction testing, that it'll have to be a concrete driveway that's poured before they allow you to lift the tidal, that you will probably have to do the full subdivision before you can put the house on the back, whereas with a strata tidal, you can move it, put it on the back, do all your connections, meet the council requirements, and then do the strata title. So I think that might help you a little bit. Okay, here. Oh, this is a question that I may not be able to answer, but let's give it a go, eh? Hi, I'd like to set up a 99-year lease trust structure. The land and house have abilities of multi-subdivision development over 100 lots in the near future. Can you give me the pros and cons? I'm based in Victoria. Any lawyers who has expertise with the trust structure? This is really a question for Derek, Derek Skye at Pacific Law. So to get Pacific Law's details, all you need to do is go to the contacts page on the right-hand side of the website, and it will come up here, Pacific Law. Ring up Derek Skye and get him to answer that question. So and you'd have to have specific reasons of setting up the 99-year lease. I can't think off the top of my head why I'd want to do that. So Derek is the man to ask, and he's the one to go for. Next question. Is it normal for a builder to regard all modifications to original quote as variations and not included in the insurance cover and claimed at first progress payment, even though the work is not to be done until near the end, ducted air conditioning? No. And just let me see who we've got online, because I think we've got a few builders online which may answer that question. But I've never known any variation to be paid up front. Especially when you're talking about ducted air conditioning, they may ask for some, money around the place, but unusual that they would ask for it in the first payment. It doesn't sound right to me. So let me see if any of the builders here. Yeah. So Andrew, you're saying Andrew, who's a builder, says that it is normal for that to happen. That they do alter the progress claims and they do cover it as a variation. So I've never known it actually in our construction, but I'm very particular about making sure that we don't have any extras anywhere along the line, that we always make sure that it's a full turnkey and that there's no changes to or variations, because I don't like doing that. That's money that's going to come out of your pocket because the bank hasn't funded it. Andrew says that all variations are due on instigation of the first progress claim after a request. So it's the beauty about having some very knowledgeable people and skill sets as the student base. Okay, so let's go back to the start. Let me copy this for you. Okay, I've been looking at a buy, renovate, sell strategy in Sydney, but right now we're having to pay top dollar for places that need renovating, so there is no margin in it. You know, I'm not a fan of renovation as a sole strategy. Is this market conditional cyclical, or is it something that happened because of all the renovating TV shows? Do you think the situation will change in the near future? I actually think there's now is not a bad time to find some of those deals. I know that in the past, with Sydney moving so strongly, I think that there is potential in it. Now, whether it continues to move as strong as it has done in the last year, you know, you're talking about 16% changes. So, look, I would say that there is deals out there to be had if you can find them, and knowing your market is most important. Trying to buy something that's coming onto the market in a hot market like Sydney is right now by, you know, waiting for an agent to list it is probably not the way to go. You're probably better to go and start doing some door knocking, find out some people that are willing to sell. You may not even have to buy a property of someone. You know, if there's something that's looking half neglected and not lived in, you might be able to find the owners, tell them that you want to renovate the property, use your money, do a JV with the seller, sell it on. But most of our deals don't come from realestate.com anymore. They come from people calling us. And I've had, over the last few weeks, we've had some cracker deals come at us. We've had some really great opportunities come at us. And that doesn't come by sitting back and doing nothing. It comes from approaching people constantly. So, you know, what I'm saying is that after a while, when you get into this market, you will soon start to understand that your best asset is you. And getting yourself out there and putting yourself out there is will start to bring you deals like you wouldn't believe from left field. Okay, I have just newly joined last month. Previously, I bought the investment property under my name and on my husband's name. I learned that we should set up a separate trust for each investment property. Could you please let me know if this is any reference to? Could you please let me know if there is any reference how to start the process to set up trust and how much roughly the cost to set up and maintain a trust for each property? Okay, you probably need to, again, talk to Pacific Law or Investor Loans Network. Again, the right-hand tab on your website there has the details for Investor Loans, has the details for Pacific Law, and they can help you out. Now, depending on what state you are, they will actually be able to direct you to someone in the state. Now, for you, that's all you need to do. You need to ring them and talk to them about it. They speak the language of DIMPNA, and they will help you out. Now, trust setups, like I said previously, you can buy one off the internet that won't protect you, and you'd be silly if you did that. So I would say that you should go off and go for make sure that you you get it set up by the people that understand what DIMPNA is talking about, and then that way you'll be safe and secure. The three-day ultimate bootcamp workbook has a huge checklist for developing. I thought that was a checklist for subdivision, but it could be possible. I don't have one in front of me. So have a look at your three-day bootcamp and there should be a developing checklist. If not, it's quite likely that it's in the download section on the website. So you might find in here on the downloads. If not, ask your coaches. I'm sure they'll know exactly where it is. Because I know on here there's a subdivision checklist there, so there's quite likely a development checklist as well. So thank you for that, Jacqueline. So this one's from Jonathan. Here we go. Let me paste this one into so everyone can see it. Hi, Ian. We are trying to decide whether to sell a DA-approved block or go ahead with development and sell the finished product. If we sell the DA-approved block to a developer, what return is the developer likely to want, and therefore, what are we likely to receive for selling the DA-approved block? A developer will want to make somewhere between 25 to 40% profit on the money that he puts into the deal. And is the developer's return calculated on their total expenditure or just on the equity that they have invested? It would be on the total cost of the project. So they want a 25 to 40% return on the cost of the project, remembering that they've got to pay GST as well. So I hope that helps. Let's see. So Jennifer's just clarified that my parents paid the money off his investment property, but his investment property is in the US, in the UK, so it doesn't matter. It's got nothing to do with Australia. So I would say that it doesn't matter. Just revalue the property over there and bring it over unless there's an issue with a tax exemption over there. Regardless, depending on the UK, it's so when you take money out of a loan and you take it somewhere, it's the purpose of the funds that make it tax deductible. So if he was to take money out of the UK, I don't know the UK laws, okay? But let's just pretend he had an investment property here in Australia and he revalued that and he took the line of credit from his investment property and he took it across to pay for the deposit on his PPR, that wouldn't be a tax deductible event because the use of the funds are personal. They're not an investment use. So I hope that makes sense. Let's go here. Sorry, let me get rid of this thing here. Can you give us any more info about the 25% development club that was mentioned earlier? I haven't received any info about the upcoming boot camp. Cheers, Karen. So if you are a Quantum member, okay, so that's the one. The Quantums are the people that have joined not only as an ultimate, but they've joined US, they've done fast profits, extreme income, millionaire mindset. There's all those ones that are included. The 25% development club is on the 4th or 5th, 6th of July, one of those, it's two of those dates. I can't remember exactly. It's a weekend though. It's a Saturday, Sunday. If you are a Quantum and you want to go to that, it's in Brisbane, I believe. And if you do want to go to that, make sure you ring up Knowledge Source and tell them that you're coming if you are a Quantum member. Now, I'll make this clear. If you're an ultimate and you're not a Quantum member, you can't go to this weekend. You have to be a Quantum to go to this weekend, okay? Because last time I mentioned something like this, I got a smack on the bottom because apparently everyone misunderstood me. So I'll say it again. If you're a Quantum member, you have access to the development club. Even if you've been a member for a while, I do believe they'll allow you to come to that event as well, okay? Okay, let's see. Remember, I'm cutting and pasting these in. There could be dangerous questions here, but let's have a go. Hi, Ian. We have approached by a person who wants to do a JV. They would like to cut off 40% of their rural residential block, and we would build a home on the block and would split the profit 50-50 upon sale. So let's get this right. We've been approached by a person who wants to do a JV. They would like to cut off 40% of their rural residential block and we would build a home on the block and would split the profit 50-50 upon sale. Issue is she can't subdivide as such. She needs to have a title share deed drawn up. What are your thoughts on title shares? I would have thought this arrangement can be messy and possibly mean a lower value overall. Absolutely. So you answered your own question there. It is very messy. Though if there's money to be made, it's fine. Your problem is going to be how do you actually really know the end value of those properties because you can't compare it to a clear title or Torrens title, right? So you may need to ask a valuer to do a valuation ahead of schedule to tell you what they think it's going to be worth. And presumably a bank, you're going to have to buy into their property, which means you'll pay stamp duty and then you'll do the 50-50 split. It's really messy. And again, people's lives change overnight. And, you know, what happens if they want to move on quickly or you need to move on quickly and you're tied into someone that you don't really know? I think you just got to be careful with it as long as it's well worded and really talk to, again, Pacific Law are very good with that stuff. If as you say, a trust owns the assets, why has my accountant told me that the assets will be considered mine by Centrelink? You don't own the. So the end result is that Centrelink will see that as a director of a company, as an appointer of a trust, you have control over the trust. You don't own the trust, but you have control of it. The company owns the trust. So in that case, they will be able to see that you're a director of a company. They'll ask what the company it's about. It's Centrelink. You can't tell them a lie. So you'll have to go off and tell them that the reason I'm a director of this company is because I have a property that's inside owned by a trust that I control. I don't know what your accountant does or doesn't know. I would be asking one of the accountants related to Dimpner about that question there. Because they may not fully understand because they might be thinking that you're a personal trustee. Thanks for the webinar. It is great. Got a question. If the trust is registered for GST, the BAS for the June quarter will be the 28th of July. In this case, if the trust has income which includes GST portions, will it be okay that before the 30th of June, the net amount of the trust income will be distributed and the GST amount will sit in the trust account until the BAS is done? I think you will have to ask your accountant around that one. I understand completely that you're saying that funds will be sitting there for 4 weeks. Because those funds are going to have to go to a taxable payment, I'm sure it would be okay. But again, I would be running that one past the accountant, especially the accountants that are involved with DIMTNA that know the trust laws. So I'd actually don't have to say, not saying that the trust account has to be zero. I'm saying that any distributions that have to happen through that trust should be done before the end of the financial year. I'm building in Victoria and have had variations up to lockup stage and still to pay variations. So Wendy's saying the same thing. Okay, let me copy this. And we're getting close to the end. Let's see. Hi, I have an investment house in the back of my property. There is a neighbor's house. So I have an investment house. At the back of my property, there is a neighbor's house. It is a heritage house. The kids are in the other state and the house hasn't been used for several years. It is very run down. What is the best option for me to take on this house and join with my backyard to create a bigger lot for subdivision, but I don't have enough money to do the develop myself? What is the best option for me to move on? Okay, so the thing I would be looking at is contacting the neighbors, asking them whether, you know, they'll do a boundary realignment. Boundary alignment is the best things to do because they're easy. All you're doing is moving a line on a plan. So you then can move the line so that you end up with a larger block of land, which you can then subdivide. Now, in that case, you've got to hold, if you haven't got enough money to do the subdivision and buy the neighbor's land, you could go off and do a joint venture with someone else in this group. So there's a whole section on joint ventures on the forum, and you might say, I'm needing this amount of money to do a development on my own home. I'm going to buy part of the block from behind, and you might even buy the block from behind and do some renovation on that as well. And being heritage listed, it's a good possibility that you may be able to get funding and to do that, because they do give grants to do up heritage listed houses depending on their heritage listing. And then you would you do the subdivision with someone else's money. Again, once it's all done, if you wanted to keep it all, you would revalue it, and whatever, you know, your joint venture partner would get their cash back, and then you would have to give them 50% of the increase of the property. So then you know that you could do it that way. You could sell you could get approval to do everything, and then you could sell a block of land before you even started, and the person that buys the block of land might release funds for you to be able to complete the subdivision. The bank might then give you money actually to do the subdivision because you've got a sale at the back end. So there's lots of different ways that you can do that. So 5th and 6th of July, Lee's telling me, is the development club. How do I roll over a property in a bear trust from one super fund to another? You're asking me a super question, and there is no way in the world I'm ever going to answer a super question, because I want to stay out of jail, and you need to get qualified advice from super specialists. If you want some super specialists around the country, again, contact Investor Loans and they will put you on to the right people. But I'm definitely not going to answer any super questions. DIMTNA won't answer them either, simply because you need to be very well qualified and registered to do that. No, DIMTNA would answer that one, but I'm not going to. I have an investment house in the back of my... No, I've read this one, surely. Let's go on to the next one. Okay. The development club is the first time we'll be running it, and so there isn't any DVDs yet. It will be a recorded event though, so you will get it out. So Nigel just said, thanks, confirmed our fears. That don't say no to a deal ever, Nigel, because I just want to make sure that you're protected. It does sound a bit messy. I just want to make sure that you're protected if you're going to go and do a joint venture like that. It's someone else's land, so obviously they're desperate for something. So you need to find that out. Ian, I have had an investment property since 1999. Construction actually completed in 2004. I've never lived in it and have not owned my own PPR in that time. When I sell this property, can I avoid capital gains by claiming it as my PPR, even though I've only rented in other properties since then and never had a PPR whilst I had investment property? I would say that because you actually haven't ever lived in it, they're not going to allow you to do it as PPR. You won't be able to prove that you ever were going to live in it. So in which case, I would say that you'd struggle to find an accountant to agree with you, and I'm sure the ATO wouldn't. You can always ask the tax office if they're willing to, if it's in your name, you can always ask the tax office for a private tax ruling, and they can decide whether that you're going to have capital gains or not. But I would say that if you've owned it for more than 10 years, it would be positive cash flow by now. So why would you be selling it? The depreciation deduction add back as well as a capital gain result in a large capital gain bill. So I am exploring all options and yes, being creative. Look, the fact that you have to pay a capital gains tax bill means that you've actually made money. So I don't really have a problem with that. Also, if my intention was to live in the property initially, but life circumstances meant it no longer suited my lifestyle, family needs when construction actually completed, can that help avoid the capital gains if the PPR option doesn't apply? And yes, I'll speak to my accountant, but interested in your thoughts. So I've given you my thoughts about that. If you can prove that you were going to live in it, and just didn't because your lifestyle changed, then that's okay. My brother, I'll give you, he actually got a private tax ruling in his favor. They were So here's the story. They actually had bought a property which was going to take them 2 or 3 years to develop to move into as their final home. And in the meantime, they bought a smaller property to do up so they could live in that in the interim. So the house that they were living in, the really nice house, they put that on the market to sell. So the funds to sell, when they sold that property, the funds were going to build the dream home, right? As it turns out, the house that they had to sell to build the dream home didn't sell, and the little house in between they renovated to move into, but they actually never moved into it because the big house didn't sell. They had to sell the little one. The little one sold. They asked for a private tax ruling. They never lived in the property, not one night, and the tax office agreed that they had enough evidence to say that that's what they were going to do, and it's just that their circumstances changed, so they gave them capital gains free. Do you have to pay back depreciation allowances when you sell investment property? Absolutely. That's the thing. You turn up at these events where they're trying to sell you a property, and they tell you it's cash flow positive, and it's cash flow positive after depreciation and after negative gearing. It baffles me that they say that, because when you go to sell, in the end, you actually the depreciation gets put back onto your cost base, and it will increase the amount of capital gain that you will have to pay. Well, not increase it. You can't double dip because you've already claimed tax on it. You can't then claim it back. Hi, Ian. If I refinanced, one second. Hi, and if I refinance an investment property loan back upwards to pay off chunk off my PPR, would the new refinance land on the investment property remain fully tax deductible? No. The only way you can pay off a chunk on your PPR is by taking tax paid money and paying it down. So if you went and did a chunk deal, you would then pay tax on that chunk. So you'd sell the deal, you'd pay tax on that, and whatever was left over, you would pay down your personal debt on your PPR. You can't take the funds from an investment property bank loan and pay down your personal debt unless you're paying back. Oh no, you can't do it. So no, Joel, unfortunately you can't. Just copy this one in. Hi, Ian. We have purchased one house and land property in Ningi, Sunshine Coast, in 2009. So far, the property is valued at the same purchase price, even though 5 years have passed. Well, you're lucky that it's still valued at the same price because there's a lot that's the other way. The rental income is only 4% and is costing us $6,000 each year to hold the property. What would you do in this situation? Will you still hold it or will you do something about it? I've checked with the council that the land is not big enough for subdivision. However, it is okay to build a granny flat. My question is whether granny flat is popular in Ningi. We can build one level up. However, I'm wondering whether it's worthwhile to do so. Okay, it's a pretty big question because it'll depend on you. Now, $6,000 a year for some people hurts. For other people that are on $200,000 income, it's not so important. And knowing that this property in 10 years, probably another 10 years' time, will be worth, you would hope, double, fingers crossed. You have to look at the property market on the Sunshine Coast. The Sunshine Coast has a lot of land and a lot of approvals that Stockland and Lendlease are putting out blocks of land everywhere. So you've just got to be careful with what you're doing. Now, to put a granny flat on there, do I think a granny flat would rent? I think a granny flat will rent in any market. There's always people willing to rent. There's always people needing lesser rent. And so to give you an example, if you were to rent a granny flat in Sydney, if you want to know what price you'll get it for a granny flat, go and look for one-bedroom units in the same suburb, and that's what you'll get for a granny flat. One to two-bedroom units is what you'll get for a granny flat in the same suburb. So in some suburbs in Sydney, you're getting $550, $600 a week for a two-bedroom granny flat, which is absolutely crazy. But everyone keeps on renting them. If you're unsure, put an ad in Gumtree and just tell them that and just put a fake ad in Gumtree saying that you've got a granny flat to rent. Don't put an address in, just put a suburb. Don't put a phone number in, just put an email address and watch and see how many people are looking for them. And then you'll know whether to do it or not. Now, if you can put a granny flat in, make sure that you can rent it to a second party, that it doesn't have to be rented to the same person as a head lease. All right. At extreme, let's see, sorry, let me get this again, paste this one in. Hi, Ian. At extreme income, you placed a spreadsheet your beautiful wife made, ease up on my beautiful wife, she's my beautiful wife, just keep your eyes off her, made on strategy costs onto Dropbox. As we didn't have connectivity at the time and missed the Dropbox opportunity, is there anywhere else I can get it? No. I think we put that spreadsheet in the appendix from memory, and it wasn't a cost spread. It wasn't for cost. It was time, and she put that, and it's in the extreme income book. So it's all good. So you can have a look at your book. What happened to the sound? It cuts out sometimes. It depends on your end and my end. Robert, keep an eye on the new road infrastructure to access Bribery directly to Brisbane. So that's one of the students, one of the platinums saying, you better be careful. Or better be careful, or it may increase property prices depending on where you are and how that will access Brisbane. Let's see. Post this one in. Has anyone ever successfully challenged the Office of State Revenue a land tax assessment? There is no way our land is worth what the OSR says it is, and we are paying thousands in land tax. However, how would you challenge it? Well, I don't think you can. I would say, sorry, just one second. Robert, can you tell me whether it's a good thing or bad thing for Ningi? So I would say that there is probably a process where you could challenge it, but I don't like your chances. Those prices come off the valuer general and what they believe that the land is worth, and you can't really challenge it. It is what it is. And land tax is land tax. So I'm sorry, but I'm sure there is a process. One second. paste this one in so everyone can see it. Hi, Ian. We just joined 2 months ago. My question is whether we can set up a trust in Queensland and we're actually in Sydney. Well, it'll depend where the property is. If you're trying to set it up in Queensland so that you don't have to pay the $500 of stamp duty and you're buying a New South Wales property, I don't like your chances. There is a rule around where your home state is and how you set up. So you will need to, again, I don't mean to keep on passing the buck here, but you will need to ask the people that are qualified around that. You can ask them. But it'll depend on the property, where the property is, and how you're buying it and all the rest of it. Lynn is saying, yes, I've heard of people challenging land tax and winning. So you have to look for comparable. So you need to look around at what that is. Ian, at Fast Profits, you mentioned a spreadsheet that tracks equity and cash flow month by month as you add properties and deals. But I can't recall if this one is available. Now, that's our intellectual property, that one. That's the one that Christine and I use when we work with students. And that's so that we can track and help people track their forward progression. Andy's saying, I've challenged the valuer generally in New South Wales on land values by giving examples of comparative sales, and it took months. Did it actually work though, Andy? I'm presuming it did. It might have taken months, but it's probably worth the battle. Because you're students, you should be able to put a decent comparable document together to say that land values and land sales are worth this much and you're charging me this much. I don't believe that that's right. So let's be reasonable here and put it together. So I'm just going to answer a couple more questions and then I am going to knock off. It's 9 o'clock past my bedtime. We've actually recently moved into a new home and we absolutely love it. It's just down the road from Dimpner's to continue my stalking pattern. And it's a waterfront on 2 acres and we've never had more than 700 square metres as a house. So coming from Sydney, one of our houses was 330 square metres and we own a property that's 95 square metres in Sydney. So 2 acres is a bit of a change for us. Teen says, I've just submitted the challenge to my land value to the Office of State Revenue and they responded by sending the valuer to reassess my land value. There is the process to do it, and this is in New South Wales. So let me, what I'll do is I'll copy that there. And I will paste it into your chat box. So in your chat box, I've just sent a link to everyone that says that's where you can put your objection in New South Wales. That's not the rest of the states, but really we're probably only talking about New South Wales and Victoria because land tax is from $1 in trusts in that area. How do we get to be one of your students? I've got a new group starting Monday, so it's too late for this year and I may not be doing it again. So you can speak to Knowledge Source if you like, ring them tomorrow and talk to them about that. Ride on mower required, absolutely. And I'm just going through the throes of working out which type of lawnmower. I really love the zero turns. They're really fantastic. They get me around all the trees and everything. They're just not very good at stopping down hills. So just going back to Ninji, I would presume that what Robert says is that Bribie Island. So let's have a look here. Let's just look it up. So Ninji, Sunshine Coast. Good one, Jason. So I think let's look at the map because then we'll work out what Robert McMillan is saying. New roads coming soon is believed that price. So Robert's saying new roads are coming soon is believed that prices will improve once the road starts construction. Would advise talking to local agents and local business. I know some people with property in the area. So presumably the reason that Robert is saying this is because if we zoom out, if they're building a road from Bribie to Brisbane to get out, it's going to make it easier to get out onto the main federal highway, which means that you'll be able to get into Brisbane easier. So that'll make a difference. Yes, Jason, we do love our goats, and I will make a chance at that. Okay. Look, it's an interesting thing, the 2 acres. Even though we've got 2 acres, I'm actually planning a tiny house. So if you Google tiny houses Australia, I'm looking at putting together this really small house. We've actually moved from a 5-bedroom, 4-story home into a two-story pro to sorry, a 2-bedroom project home. And so there's 6 of us in there, and it's quite interesting. It's definitely the way that I'd like to go. As you all know, I'm a very small person, so living small is probably a good thing. Okay, so that's me for the day. Thank you everyone for being part of the line. Thank you for allowing me to actually get on and talk to you, and hopefully you've picked up something today. Again, lots of you have helped me out too by answering some of the questions here, and I appreciate that greatly. So, have a great night, and we'll see each other soon.